Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Welcome back. In recent episodes on the podcast, I have been reviewing a lot of research studies, and I've got a couple more here to talk about in this episode. And while it is fun to nerd out together, why would I be spending so much time on this besides the fun of it? I am hoping the podcast becomes a resource for mental health professionals in a lot of ways, especially in understanding how research applies to the practice of mental health, and also my interest in our connection to animals. I think that the parts of our systems that we share with mammals has a lot to do with our effectiveness in therapy and our understanding about the world overall. And I have a keen interest in working in animal-assisted interventions and therapy practices as well. And so my natural curiosity about how to span those two environments comes into play. And so the research episodes of late have been discussing how that works between humans and animals and humans and humans. So that'll be more what we discuss today in this episode. The challenge is there are a lot of studies, a lot, actually. That hasn't always been true. But recently, the research on things has just really come out in a variety of ways that helps us understand the interaction between nonverbals and physiological connections that two beings might experience when they are near each other and in an interaction. And despite it being difficult to keep up with all the research, perhaps, one of the most important things I think we can do is to keep immersing ourselves in the literature so that we get used to the terms and understand the limits of each study and what it really does or does not say in terms of how we apply that to the way we practice. So in this episode, I'm going to actually review some of the recent episodes to kind of help solidify the building blocks to where we are headed, because I want to just make sure that everyone is on the same page of where we've been in the last few episodes and what it means and why the research that I have today to share builds on what I've been talking about in recent episodes. So in March is when I began the most recent explorations into different kinds of research. And what I wanted to highlight starting in episode 31, is that this concept of heart rate variability, which is a proxy for how well our parasympathetic nervous system is helping regulate our systems, and it has a correlation to mental and physical health. I wanted to just explain how that worked, and I used work from authors such as Deb Dana, Stephen Porges, and Ina Hazan. And then in episode 32, I wanted to highlight the fact that there's research that shows the heart rate variability, which is an indicator of how the heart is able to moderate between the acceleration of the fight flight system and the deceleration of the relaxation system. So that's in combination, that's called the autonomic nervous system, and it works together to kind of respond to the environments we find ourselves. And so there's this idea of heart rate variability, which is, it's a lot more complex than what I'm giving it do here, but it talks about our ability to manage stress in the face of a changing environment, if you will. So what we learned from Ellen Gerke and her team in episode 32 was the fact that heart rate variability does correlate between species. Their study was one of the first to show that when in interaction, both humans and horses have a way that their heart rates are interacting with each other, and their heart rate variability likewise does that too. And this was significant because it's showing the interspecies interaction capabilities here. And so from there, we went to episode 33, where Donald Moss, he gave an update on the status of the ways all the theoretical implications of heart rate variability are coming together and how they influence practice. And again, I incorporated some thoughts from Deb Dana, who helped us understand that our normal empathic tendencies as mental health therapists probably are doing a lot to support our patients in regulating their systems. But it was a reinforcement, if you will, of the ways that our natural empathic tendencies do improve these outcomes. And then in the last episode, number 34, I talked about ways that we can see some of this come across the face, and particularly some of the eye movements that show when someone's experiencing real joy. For example, that's that Duchenne smile from the French researcher way back in the 1800s that realized there's some muscles that activate when someone is genuinely smiling from their internal emotions actually matching the expression on their face. So that my French teacher would be smiling somewhere, I should probably correct, and more than likely Mr. Duchamp might have pronounced his name differently than what I said a minute or so back. So now we find ourselves here in this episode, and I want to take this further with two different studies. The first is what's called a systematic study, and a systematic study is kind of a study of other studies. And they're really appreciated by people like me because they get a group of, in this case, quite a few researchers together, and they all kind of review the wide variety of research projects that have been referenced on a certain topic. And they put them together in sort of this package that helps you understand the common terms and things across them in order. And it's really helpful in cases like this, because it helps the field move forward, because they're going to set some terms for us and just set some ways of how some best practices could be done in terms of calculating results and design, and importantly, how to report results, so that when you're reading from one study to another, you can be kind of assured that you're looking at the similar things. So this research is called, the title is Interpersonal Autonomic Physiology, A Systematic Review of the Literature. And it's by Richard Palumbo, Marisa Maricini, Lisa Wayant, Oliver Wilder Smith, Heather McGee, Sui Liu, and Matthew Goodwin. It's published in 2017 in the Personality and Social Psychology Review. The first thing off the top, they're going to tell us that we are talking about interpersonal physiology. What a nice term that they've come up with here. Yeah, just interpersonal as in in between beans and the physiology. So they're talking about this as the general methodology, quote, for studying temporal interactions and physiological processes between multiple people. Interpersonal physiology. Great. And within that, they're going to define a new term, which I also enjoy, physiological synchrony. Doesn't that sound like something you'd be interested in looking at further? Physiological synchrony refers to, quote, any interdependent or associated activity identified in the physiological processes of two or more individuals. So I've been trying to find ways to explain when heart rate variability is across horses or across humans, or eye movements as a result of experiencing genuine joy that is reflected on the face. And now we're going to call all of these things physiological synchrony, and they refer to interdependent or associated activity identified in the physiological processes of two or more individuals. Note here now we're talking individuals because we're going to include interspecies options for this as well. So they go through a bunch of studies. Let me explain. They have this eligibility criteria, which is where they set up all the things that they want to look at. And they then look through a lot of databases to determine which ones they're going to review. And of the studies that met their criteria, they found over 4,000 manuscripts from the initial search engine check on those terms. And then they went through a selection process and narrowed it down to 61 studies that met their criteria for interpersonal physiology. And they also now are going to delineate interpersonal autonomic physiology, meaning that curiosity about the different parts of the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system. So then they go through 61 studies and they just provide us with a tremendous amount of helpful information about how there are results that show between different pairs, like parent and child, romantic couples, teammates, and therapist and client interactions. And as you can imagine, with all those studies, there's a tremendous amount of variety in what is studied and what is shown to be as results. So I'll link the notes, of course, in the show notes and on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, so that you can see this further. They also go through and provide some theoretical explanations, many of which I've covered on the podcast. But the main thing I want to highlight for you is their discussion summary. Essentially, they're going to let us know that despite there being a tremendous amount of evidence that there is physiological synchrony, it doesn't operate in consistent ways. It's not dependent on the conditions, such as what environment or behaviors are happening. It doesn't depend on the mode of communication between the people. It does not depend on the relationship type. They've shown that in long-term relationships, such as between couples and in interactions where the people didn't know each other prior to the interaction, there is demonstrated this sort of synchrony across their physiological symptoms as referenced in their autonomic nervous system activity. And that follows a second observation in all of these studies, and that is that sometimes the synchrony goes in what they're terming as a positive direction, as in empathy. So that would be, as we saw in some of the studies I've researched earlier, maybe an increase in heart rate variability when the pair are together. And sometimes they're also a negative synchrony in nervous system activations, meaning that maybe when there's conflict in relationships or other difficulties, that the indicators of the nervous system go toward a stress indication. And so what they're suggesting here is that while it's clear that two beings in interaction do impact each other physiologically, in addition to maybe, you know, experientially, like how you feel in the interaction, your emotions or thoughts about the interaction, you're actually, it's clearly demonstrated that you have a physiological response to being in an interaction as well. What is not clear and what needs to be researched much further is how those combinations work. And that's the related to the second study I'm going to share in just a minute. The other thing they want to make sure we are aware of is reminding us that for pairs that are in relationships, these ways that the physiological synchrony works is not static. In other words, as the relationship moves, so too do the indicators of how the interaction is moving between the two beings. And something that I find really fascinating as well, in addition to the whole thing really, is that in occasion, some of these ways that we document the physiological synchrony can be predictive of other outcomes. And this is some studies actually done by Levinson and Gottman early on in the 1980s that showed the ways couples interact could predict their relationship satisfaction long-term. And there are also some mother-infant research that I've mentioned. They don't list Beatrice Beebe's research here, but it's similar in that she can watch physical indicators in mother-infant dyads at the first few months of life and predict attachment at later years. So this systematic study from these authors is super helpful about now any future researchers putting their findings in these terms so that we can continue to build on the same conversation and impact the field with any new findings. And to that end, I'm going to introduce a second study now so that we can see how some authors out of Italy have taken this further. This study is entitled Unveiling Directional Physiological Coupling in Human-Horse Interactions. It's by researchers out of Pisa, Italy, and they are Alejandro Calera, Chiara Scopa, Laura Cantalbrigo, Antonio Lenata, Enzo Schinlingo, Paolo Barigli, and Alberto Greco. Hopefully I am getting close on your names, and thank you for this impressive study. It includes 20 horses and 22 human participants, and they had 40 distinct pairs between human and horses where they had three different interactions. The first interaction where they were doing video recording of behaviors and physiological data recording, including heart rate variability. And they had three different scenarios that they took these data findings and tried to make sense of them. The first was a baseline setting. The second one was a setting where the horse was free to explore the human, sort of what you might call at liberty, meaning the horse was not restrained in any way and was free to explore. And the third one was where the humans did some grooming of the horse. And they have a really, as I say, impressive study that explains all the different combinations and permutations that setup would enable. And they summarize by saying that what their study shows is that, quote, the autonomic nervous system of the horses affects the response of the human autonomic nervous system and vice versa. So in some scenarios, the horse's physiological indicators were shown to be driving the reaction in the humans. And in other scenarios, it was the reverse, where the humans' physiological indicators were driving the responses in the horses. And again, it's kind of context dependent. They had some familiar humans and some unfamiliar humans to the horses. In the grooming, they ensured that the humans were grooming on both the left side and the right side of the horse because domesticated horses are used to most activity coming from their left side. So they were trying to determine if they also took calculations when the person was on the right side, if that were different. So they really thought of all different ways to kind of delineate different environments and contexts such that they could have more results that suggested if there was a difference. And much like the systematic study, as I read their findings, it shows that there are ways that sometimes the horse's nervous system was impacting the humans and vice versa, but it's not a predictable pattern. So like most of the studies we are looking at, they're going to suggest future research. But this one is unique in it, in its ability to really show not just a correlation like the earlier study showed, but the fact that in this case, the one partner in the species is actually affecting the physiological indicators of the other partner and vice versa, depending on the situation and the environment and the context in which they are interacting. So, you know, much like much of the research we've discussed, you might think, well, probably you might have known that before you listened to this episode. So what do we do with this information? In other words, what do we do with the fact that the research is showing that, yep, sometimes one being affects the other and sometimes it goes in the reverse and it's context dependent and it's thus far an unpredictable pattern. So as responsible mental health therapists, how do we make sense of this information? Well, first off, I think the important thing is to kind of let this validate perhaps our own internal experiences where, you know, some days you're in a session and you feel like you were really impacted by someone's nervous system activity during the session. And other times, you know, on occasion, even though we might not try for this to happen, in fact, I think most of us try very hard not to have it happen, that our own nervous systems impact the other person, at least not negatively. But I think it ensures the fact that there is more happening than just the words going across a mental health therapy session. And in the field of equine assisted services, there's more happening than the physical touch or interaction of groundwork or riding with horses. There's literal physical indicators that are shifting across the dyad and the treatment team, including the horse. So I hope that this validates our awareness that, you know, the sensations and the thoughts we might have had, yep, that's definitely occurring. And now we can start to be really conscious about how we are going to watch that bi-directional movement. You know, in other words, do we want to be more conscious about the negative and positive affects or emotions going across the system? Do we want to be more thoughtful about our interventions? And that's why I'm also focusing on the podcast about how we can see indicators of receptivity in our patients and even in working with our horse and other animal partners of how these things we're saying and doing are being received so that we can maybe start to be more aware of how these interactions go back and forth between beings and just at a minimum start to be able to observe them in real time and then determine when to make an appropriate intervention based on what we see. So I've said it before, but it's just a really exciting time to be working in the field of mental health and animal-assisted therapy. I just am thrilled to share this with you and am glad that you are here. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And If you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.